Right. Thank you for tuning in with us again. We're in our third part of our four-part series here on helping come alongside families and individuals with disabilities or chronic illness. And today we're looking at the subject of helping, how do we help families negotiate a path to acceptance. Now, help us understand what you mean by this, a path to acceptance of what?
In many ways, of all the different kinds of things that we talked about in this section. One of the ways I like to start this off in terms of thinking about it is that a quote a friend of mine once said to me that said, "Peace is the deliberate adjustment of my life to the will of God." So when we talk about acceptance, we're really talking about how do we develop peace about the change in our circumstances, the change in our reality that's come about as a result of disability, and be able then to get ourselves centered for the new life that God has called us to that's different than the one that we were expecting. So one of the stories I like to tell sometimes about my kids, I love to tell stories about my kids, and my son Freddie, when he was about 7, we go to Maine every summer, and he was out fishing with his dad and his granddad, who also Fred. We have just the lineage of endless Fred. And I personally like to go fishing as long as I'm catching something. And so Freddie at 7 was still kind of in that same type of mindset. I guess that makes me like a 7-year-old. But anyway, they've been out there for a number of hours in the hot sun, hadn't caught anything. And finally, Freddie was exasperated, and he looked around at all the other friends in the boat, and he said, "We're experiencing a bad hand of providence." In a lot of ways, I think that sums up what families have to work through in this idea of acceptance and developing peace about the presence of disability in their lives.
And just what kind of hand of providence they've got.
Right, that we often look at difficult circumstances as, whether we like to admit it or not, that we have we been dealt a bad hand of providence. That's what the underlying question really is. When our expectations in life bump up against different realities, what's our response going to be? And what it brings out is really a lot of different very good questions about who is God? What is his character? Right? Why am I experiencing this? You know, and often difficult questions that people go through, did I do something to cause this? That's where the guilt issue that we didn't really get into in the previous section sometimes comes from. But two things that I think are really helpful to think about when we talk about acceptance are the idea that, first of all, it's a process. It's not an event. You just don't wake up on Thursday and acceptance has occurred. and that acceptance is really about embracing reality as it is, not as I wish it would be. And that's where the major turning point takes place.
Kind of back up. Are you going to say a little bit more about acceptance as a process?
Yes. And so what I'll do is, what I'll basically do in this section is talk through what is the process that an individual or family goes through in negotiating this path. What is the process towards acceptance?
So I think there's something particularly for us as elders to understand, because we want to be able to counsel our folks and give them the answer, which we know, and we want them to accept the answer. And we can get frustrated ourselves when someone has met with us, we've gone through the scriptures with them, and after we've met with them, it's as if nothing had taken place. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of one thing where you can hear answers, but what I'm hearing from you is the actual assimilating that into your life takes time.
Right.
And we need to accept that.
And it requires, honestly, a certain level of conflict, a certain level of internal conflict and internal struggle that has to take place in order to get to that place of peace. And often we don't always think about peace as coming as being a result of conflict. Sometimes we think about peace as being the absence of conflict. But often when it comes to acceptance, this idea of acceptance comes through an internal struggle. And if I can make one other point here too, one of the things, just because disability is a normal part of life in an abnormal world doesn't mean it's easy. So on the one hand, we shouldn't be surprised by it. On the other hand, it still does require this negotiating this establishment.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, for myself, I simply don't trust people who are able to take crises suddenly hitting them, and they, at least for at the short term, are acting calmly and, you know, we're trusting the Lord. I just don't trust them because it seems there needs to be some kind of inner kind of conflict or struggling that's just natural to go through.
Yeah.
And basically, the person just hasn't faced it. It's more, in other words, what I really think is taking place is denial.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have yet to face what they're really going through.
Right. And denial being one of the stages of grief.
Yeah.
They're not engaging the grief process, which is part of the struggle. And often I think what you see in cases like that is families that resign themselves to a situation, but they don't accept it. And there's a big difference between, resignation is a counterfeit peace. And in the end, it will bite you. You know, it does not bring a person to genuine peace with their situation. Resignation is a counterfeit form of peace. So let's talk through this. I was Presbyterian. That's when I have a series of R's. And
okay.
So let's talk through basically five different steps. And again, these aren't necessarily linear, but, you know, being finite human beings, we have to go through them in some order.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being the idea of releasing our expectations. The second one being the idea of redirecting our life, or allowing our life to be redirected towards a new life that incorporates disability into it. The third R is responsibility, incorporating responsibility into our lives that is different than the responsibilities that we had before. Relinquishing control.
Mm-hmm.
And then realizing that God does bring good things out of difficult circumstances, that the work of God will be displayed in our lives. So let's talk through those five things.
Okay.
The first one, this idea of releasing expectations, you know, again, we talked earlier about that the onset of disability brings a huge shift in the expectations that we might have for what our life will look like, our child's life, our retirement, any number of other things. And so learning to release those expectations is just a huge part of moving towards acceptance. One of the things that helped me that was interesting, everybody has a different touch point, I think, in their life, but I was in my parents' kitchen one day. Tim was probably 6-8 months old. I was still very much in the midst of coming to terms with what it meant to have a baby who had Down syndrome. And I looked at this picture on my parents' refrigerator, and it was a picture from earlier in the year when I just found out I was pregnant with Tim, and we were on a vacation at the beach. And I'm standing there playing with Freddie at the beach, and with a friend of mine from college was there. And all of a sudden it struck me that Tim was there, right? That Tim was there, and that all along, that Tim had always had Down syndrome from conception. So, and it was just this earth-shattering revelation to me that the only person who had been clueless at that point was me. God wasn't surprised, you know, by the fact that Tim had Down syndrome. And so the only thing that actually changed when Tim was born was now I knew, right? And so releasing, that for me was a very helpful thing in releasing my expectations that it wasn't Tim that needed to change. It was me, you know, that needed to change in how I looked at him and how I looked at our life. But the thing is that releasing expectations is, again, doesn't involve a certain amount of grief, and it's a very painful process. The second thing is this idea of redirecting to a new life, and sometimes making an analogy between an earthquake, I think, is helpful. If you think about it, we've seen lots of different news reports where there have been earthquakes in different areas around the world, and you can see that the degree of devastation, you know, from an earthquake can vary from everything from the intensity to it to what the infrastructure was like there before, and all those things have implications to family life. But what we also notice is that when an area is recovering from the occurrence of an earthquake, that the people that live there need to redirect their lives based on what's just occurred, not rebuild the life that they had before. So, for instance, if you try to rebuild the life that you had before the earthquake, when the next earthquake comes, what will happen? The same devastation will happen that happened before. It requires a redirecting of life, and the same thing happens in the life of a family affected by disability. If your goal is to rebuild the life you had before, it prolongs the sorrow and it increases the frustration. And the healing that comes about through acceptance does not happen. If you're willing to redirect your life, to allow your life to be different because you let go of the expectations of the way it quote-unquote should be, right? Mm-hmm. And we start to allow God to redirect our lives to where we've been called to be, to accept where we are, then that brings a whole new level of health. And another example of that, and this will sound like we only ever go to the beach. We rarely go to the beach. Tim was little for some reason. We went to the beach a lot. Tim was a baby. We were at a different beach. And I was walking down the shoreline holding Tim. And I went by this series of elderly ladies. There were 10 elderly ladies in these chairs that were all set up at the edge of the water. Mm-hmm. And then there were two folks who were with them that kept running around building a wall of sand in front of them to keep their feet dry. So every time a wave would come up, the wall would get knocked down. It's these other folks would run by and they'd make the wall again, and then the wall would get knocked down. And of course, the obvious picture that came to my mind was, move the chairs, right? Why don't you just move the chairs? And what God just impressed on me at that moment was that was what I was doing. I was trying to rebuild my life as it had been before, and I wasn't willing to move my chair. You know, and when he gave me that picture, that what I needed to do to come to acceptance of all the implications of Tim's life now being connected to mine, mm-hmm. was that I needed to move my chair. And so being willing to redirect to a new life, the life that is not the life that you wish you had, is another element of acceptance. And the third one is this idea of incorporating responsibility. Disability brings with it increased responsibilities to caregivers. We don't like to work sometimes. I remember that's one of the things I struggled with as a parent when Tim was young and going through all his early intervention programs. Well, I haven't had times where I had my little internal temper tantrums. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this. You know, and then I'd look in his eyes, you know, and it was as if he said to me, Mom, will you help me? And of course, then I was willing to do it, and so there is an increased level of responsibility and the willingness to step up to the plate and provide what needs to be done. It's just part of that. One of my favorite stories related to the responsibility is there's a book called The Power of the Powerless by Christopher DeBink, and Christopher had a brother named Oliver who had profound disabilities, and he talks in that book about. He, as a child, once asked his dad, well, I guess as an adult, he asked his dad after Oliver had died. He said, Dad, how did you care for Oliver for 32 years? And his father said, I didn't take care of him for 32 years. Every day I got up and I said, can I feed Oliver today? And then he said, yes, we can. So part of incorporating responsibilities, learning as Christians to live moment by moment, which is how God calls us to live, right? To live moment by moment, but most of us don't practice that in the ways that we're really called to. And so disability in some ways presents a unique opportunity to live more in the moment. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you've been giving these talks, all the things you've been saying with those who have to experience these things, everything that you're saying they have to learn is what all Christians need to be learning.
Right.
In any life. So it's like I remember when I first became a diabetic and being told what I should eat or not eat. Basically, what I'm supposed to eat is a healthy diet.
Right.
It's sort of the same thing here. Things that any family must learn is that which is what is good for any healthy family to do.
Right, and so that's what makes it not difficult for us to relate to. It's not other, right? And go back to what we talked about earlier about people with disabilities being looked at as other. It's not other. It's this difference in degree of all of our own experiences. So the remedies, again, are the same. In terms of the next one, the idea of relinquishing control. I think control is an illusion, but one that most of us are very comfortable with. we really like, I mean, the current economic situation just brings that to light in another way. All of us attempt to control our lives much more than we theologically would like to admit. Well, theologically say, yes, of course, God's in control. And yet, what we practice often is a very tight-fisted attempt to control the circumstances of our lives. And so part of what I had to go through in terms of the whole path acceptance was letting God pry my white-knuckled, fingers off the steering wheel of my life and to really come to terms with how much I really practiced active attempts to control my life. And so what that really... I think what it sort of opens us up to is seeing how we really don't trust God in practice. Mm-hmm. And so then what it brings to light even at a deeper level is what do I really think about who God is? And I have a friend who's a psychologist who says that all healthy relationships are built on the are like a bridge, and they're built with the trusses of trust and respect. Right. And if you think about our relationship with God being built on trust and respect, if God is, do I believe that God is all powerful and all good or not? Right, that's like sort of the fork in the road. If he's not all powerful, I can't trust him to help me. Right, and if he's not good, I can't respect him. I need to flip it the other way as well. And this is sort of what gets exposed, I think, in this whole path of acceptance, is how do we really view God? Is God powerful and good? Or do we just think he's one or the other? Not to be trusted, not to be respected, right? And so that's going to really affect how much we're willing to let go of that white-knuckled steering wheel feeling, how much we're willing to put our weight on trusting the Lord.
That's what... Well, we can add another R to your thing.
Sure.
That's what this whole experiences of suffering or dealing with difficult situations, it adds the word really. I mean, we all say, here's what I think, here's what I believe, and what these trials throw in there is now we say, here's what I really have found out that I believe or think.
Yeah. So it's a huge, you can see it as a huge vehicle for growth, but you can also see how if a person gets stuck there, how it will be a blockade to their being able to really arrive at acceptance and to experience the peace of God in their lives.
You mentioned that you won't like being behind the steering wheel, and that's what a lot of we all like to say and use that image a lot. I tell people I have a completely different image of all. I don't picture myself in a car. I picture myself on a roller coaster. And, God has the track and he knows where it's going.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's going. The little bit I can see, I really don't want it to go
right.
there.
That's right.
And I just hold on. See where we go.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And
even then, are we going to hold on? Are we
going to
put our hands up over our head and enjoy
the ride? I never put my hands over my head. I'm gripping the...
I'm a gripper, too.
So, but
I think, the beauty of the life of faith is when we learn to trust God more and more, and it does come incremental.
Yeah.
We talk about the leap of faith, but it's often the baby steps of faith.
Mm.
That God releases his power when we relinquish ours. And that's the beauty of that's how that peace comes about, is that he releases his power when we relinquish ours. And what happens then is that last R, which is the idea of really realizing the benefits. When we've been able to let go of our expectations and embrace the responsibilities that come and really relinquish our need for control, then we start to realize the benefits of the place that God has brought us. This is not a negative place. This does not have to be a negative place. That there are many, many positives and good things that God brings about through our lives because he's in the business of redeeming difficulty for his glory and our good, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I could do endless hours of talking about the blessings in our lives that, as far as Tim goes. I remember when Timmy was first born, my mom and dad, when they came up to visit us, Tim was born in January, and it was a snowy day, and they looked, my mom looked out over the fields, and it just happened to be that the way that the sunlight is hitting, it just looked like a whole field of diamonds. And what struck her was how much looking at the world through Tim's eyes would allow us to see a dimension of beauty that we had not seen before. And that field was a picture, you know, to her, that if she saw that field in a different way through the sun's effect on the snow that day. And Timmy really has been just a tremendous blessing to us. I'm always amazed at the different perspective that he brings to things and the ways that God has used him in my life to help me to understand the gospel on a whole different level and to experience peace and a dependency on God that I wouldn't have done otherwise. Mm-hmm. Let me think. Well, I'm going to think about one more thing here before we finish, and that's the idea that acceptance in the case of disability versus chronic illness can be a different thing. Remember, I said that disability has substantial limitations in terms of function, and that chronic illness has varying limitations. And what can happen often with chronic illness is that if we unpredictable nature of chronic illness makes acceptance sometimes a more difficult thing, because you can have a chronic illness that comes and goes depending on either use of medication or the nature of the illness, or you may have a chronic illness where the disabling condition that comes with that is degenerative. So what happens then is it's as if the floor drops out from one level to another to another to another, and you're just almost like descending down a dark staircase. And so the acceptance issues occur over and over and over again in families who are dealing with that type of degenerative disability. Alzheimer's is an example of a chronic illness that creates degenerative disability that has a different type of acceptance issues. And so it's a very long path to be reprocessing grief over and over and over again. That said, there also are different periods in the life, even in a more static state of disability, where the child develops, for example, you get through milestones that may be missed, or typical rites of passage that might be missed, where there will be grief processes that will surface again. But the acceptance issues do follow a little bit of a different path, depending on whether you're dealing with a generally more static versus degenerative situation.
Well, I was kind of glad you brought that up. It reminds us again, I think, particularly thinking about elders and shepherding our people, the difficult part about shepherding, being a minister, is as you're caring for people, there's no clear progress.
Right.
If you're digging a ditch, which I've done before, you at least can look back and say, I've gone this far, and it's not going to be filled back up again. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're shepherding people, you look back, and sometimes it seems like it just filled back up again. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is the same. I'm noting here that the people, this is a marathon, and as time goes on, they may be more accepting at one time, and something new happens, whether it's with a chronic illness or disability, and it's got to be kind of almost relearned again, or so on, and we have to be accepting ourselves of that our families are not being the ideal families who have learned wonderful lessons from us, and if only they would handle things better.
Right, the already not yet, right? That even where restoration may be taking place in some ways, we're going to see certainly ways that it's not going to happen the way we'd like to.
I mean, in one sense, it may be using the analogy of the church itself being family.
Yeah.
And then we have a family now in which they have a again, maybe a child with a disability, or someone else with a chronic illness, or so on. It's affecting just ourselves of how we normally would do things.
Right.
And we've got to make changes ourselves. We have to kind of go through the process ourselves.
Exactly, that's a perfect analogy.
Well.
Because the body of Christ is a family, and then you go more to the whole imagery of the body of Christ, right? And all the different elements of the body, each having both their gifts and each having their disabling conditions, right? They bring to that body in this already not yet world that we live in, and that's why I think the way that I usually wrap up this section is talking about modeling Jesus in the lives of people in this context, because Jesus, the Gospels tell us, was full of grace and truth. And so what people need in this tough path of acceptance, we don't want them to end up at resignation. We have to be willing to walk alongside them through the conflict and to see that being full of grace and truth means being a truth teller, right? Being that elder that does speak biblical truth, that does bring biblical perspective, and yet does it with tremendous grace, right? When you think how long Jesus bears with us in our sanctification, right? And we think about how much progress we make in this lifetime in our sanctification compared to what our glorification will look like. It's minuscule, right? And so the same grace and patience that Jesus brings to us, we need to bring to families. And the same truth, having the courage to be truth tellers, but in gracious and understanding ways.
And I guess we all have our tendency to go one way or the other. We're happy to tell the truth, or what we think is the truth, without grace.
Yeah.
Or when we think we're just being filled with grace, and we're really just afraid to help a person along with truth.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you again.
Mm-hmm.
Let me end this. We've got a nice little snowfall with the sun shining. I've been watching this.